After sold-out runs at the Public Theater and London's National Theater, Here Lies Love, the groundbreaking musical from David Byrne and Fatboy Slim, is now in previews on Broadway. Get swept up in what Vogue calls a life-giving, roof-raising blast of pure joy about the rise and fall of Imelda Marcos at the hands of the Philippine People Power Revolution. Here Lies Love is a revolutionary experience unlike any other on Broadway. It's a party and you're invited. Get tickets at HereLiesLoveBroadway.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at the University of Chicago and NYU. Commenting on Supreme Court oral arguments on Halloween 2022 on two cases that very much look like an updating of Grutter versus Bollinger 2003 that confirmed affirmative action in the choice of admissions for law schools, for undergraduate schools. In this instance, Harvard and the University of North Carolina are before the court, and Richard reports that the objection made by Harvard and UNC is that race might help a candidate. I'm following Richard's reporting. It cannot hurt them. You say, Richard, this was turned away by the arguments by the plaintiffs. How so?
Look, I mean, the point is downright silly. Let's suppose you have two candidates, and what we say is, we're going to increase the score of one of them, but not the other. And the candidate whose score you increase is a member of a minority group. Well, he gets an advantage. So suppose what you did is you changed it a little bit and you told the kid who was not in the preferred group, we're going to lower you. What matters is the difference, and the difference is the same whether you raise one and keep the other constant or lower the other one and keep the first one constant. And so there's no way that you could use race to raise the position of one person unless you're going to prejudice somebody else. So all of this is just kind of a bit of intellectual double talk to conceal something which is perfectly obvious. And in fact, it really does make an extreme difference. So one of the ways that you can start to try to do this is to say, look, well, we don't always worry about grades. And one of the things that the, I think was in the Harvard argument, they said if we're short of oboists, we'll admit a hobo. Not a hobo, an oboist, right? One way or the other. And, you know, Justice Roberts, who's a famous remark on this, is the best way to offend the need for racial conscious preferences is to stop giving racial conscious preferences. So he, way back, was already fairly online as rejecting the O'Connor solution of gradual assimilation so that the problem will start to disappear. And if you actually go look at this stuff, one of the things you discover as an admissions officer, and I did a lot of admissions work when I first started teaching at the University of Southern California, is the following very simple proposition. People have really strong grades and really strong boards are the same people have really strong extracurricular activities, background disadvantages, whatever you want. And so that if you start looking at the other stuff, you don't change the rank order dramatically. There is no evidence whatsoever that if you start looking at collateral issues, that you will find that minority candidates who are systematically weaker on boards and grades are going to be systematically stronger on these other kinds of issues, which is the sort of thing that Harvard wants to do and the UNC wants to do. So their attitude is what we do is we reduce the significance of the two things that really matter, and then we take the soft stuff that we can manipulate and get the kind of class that we want. But when the original reforms came on this stuff, with the use of IQ tests and these scores, the theory was this is a neutral step. And if a kid who comes from a bad background does well, nobody's going to be able to exclude him on snob-like factors of the sort that influenced what went on at Harvard in the 1920s. So these tests were thought to be egalitarian. And now, of course, it's thought to be exactly the opposite thing. So what does one do? I think what one has to do is to say, if we're going to take into account hardship on the part of one group, we have to take care of the hardship on the other group. So if there's a black kid who suffered seriously from some kind of childhood disadvantage, and there's an immigrant Asian kid who suffered in exactly the same way, we don't simply look at one set of hardships and ignore the other. And I think once you start to do that, everything becomes kind of race neutral, and it turns out you can't reverse the overall order. Now, am I happy with this? Well, I actually wrote about this some time ago, and my own view is that the highly individualistic view that one takes, that is looking simply at boards and grades of individuals, is not the way most institutions want to work. And if you put race aside for a moment and ask yourself, are you just going to take that kind of school? Somebody's going to say, no, we want to take other things around. And so we want to have a football team or whatever it turns out that you want to do. We have to get some alumni in there. We think that we want to get people who are good in the performing arts and stuff like that. And you start making these funny compromises. And so the strongest argument for affirmative action is if you actually look at the sentiment inside the university, the support for affirmative action is extraordinarily strong. It's up there around 90%+. If you look at the general population who are outside of the system, it tends to be much lower. And so the hard question is it general preferences of people who don't run the institution or participate in that cover, or is it the stuff that takes place by the people in the institutions that cover? And I tend to think it's a little bit of a mix, but more of the latter. What makes this so complicated is that current, given the way in which these various enforcement mechanisms take place, you take your life in your hands if you decide we really do want to run a colorblind strategy, you're going to be investigated by somebody for underrepresentation of majority individuals. So I think what you want to do is to get the government out of this stuff on the private side, which means getting rid of all the prohibitions that you see in Title VI, whichever title it turns out to be, and sort of let them decide themselves. And on the public side, I don't think the colorblind standard works. That's a perfectly appropriate standard for criminal law when it comes to enforcing the law of burglary and murder. But if private institutions think that all these other things count in running an internal operation, we have a public institution which is not enforcing the law, but actually running a business, they should have more or less the same kinds of freedom that the private analogs do. Now, you can't quite make it go because public institutions are subject to pressures that private ones are not, namely from your favorite state legislator and so forth. And so what I've advocated for the last 20 years is you get rid of all the anti-discrimination laws, see how much racial preferences emerge in a private institution when there's not a gun at the head, and then sort of take the median of that and allow some degree of freedom inside the public institution. And so, you know, on the one hand, I'm deeply cynical of everything that's been said by Harvard and UNC, all their claims and so forth. But I understand that the internal demand matters. And generally speaking, I think it's a very dangerous thing for a federal government or for a state government to say, here are all these institutions who have bona fide commitments, and every one of them is misguided. So the reaction that's going to come, and I think it's likely that Grutter will be overruled.
Oh, yes, let's get to that point. You indicate that it will fall, but it will fall surprisingly. And the court is now understood to be 6-3 in favor of conservative interpretations of the Constitution.
Any transitional period.
Do you see Justice Roberts taking a middle position here to come up with a new version of affirmative action?
Look, this is not Justice Roberts on abortion. His position and his dissents instead of the earlier cases in Seattle and Louisville having to do with educational compromises that were wrought by extensive community negotiation was to override them both. So in this particular issue, it's not Mr. Justice Roberts moving to the left, it's Mr. Justice Roberts moving to the right. And so if he's going to be the median voter, you're going to see a very rapid transition and something to the effect that as of the admission seasons for 2023 or for 2024, you have to do it colorblind. This is going to require every institution to retool itself from start to bottom. There's going to be massive resistance to what's going on here, all sorts of evasions. I'm very uncomfortable about this. I'm trying to do it. And I want you to know that I find the current system, the current set of preferences, absolutely intolerable. So let me give you the Epstein
30 dilemma. Seconds, Richard, 30 seconds.
Okay, it's really easy. My position is I'm always in favor of affirmative action programs that are run by me, meaning that somebody who realizes the trade-off between this and everybody else. But what happens now is we have hardline colorblind individuals which don't give enough play in the system, and then we have champions of affirmative action which go far too far in the opposite direction. So you're left with the really difficult problem. The center does not
hold. And what will the vote be?
The vote will be 6-3 in favor of cutting it back. And the political ramifications, nobody quite understands.
Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow of the Hoover Institution. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
After sold-out runs at the Public Theater and London's National Theater, Here Lies Love, the groundbreaking musical from David Byrne and Fatboy Slim, is now in previews on Broadway. Get swept up in what Vogue calls a life-giving, roof-raising blast of pure joy about the rise and fall of Imelda Marcos at the hands of the Philippine People Power Revolution. Here Lies Love is a revolutionary experience unlike any other on Broadway. It's a party and you're invited. Get tickets at HereLiesLoveBroadway.com.
Okay, what's the number one reason you should try Instacart? Shopping over 1.5 million unique products from over 1,000 retailers and get everything delivered right to your door in as fast as 1 hour, all in one app. So you can spend more time with the ones who matter most. Visit Instacart.com to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.